Hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. So today I'm going to be talking about a topic that is a little sliver of my dissertation, which I am defending in a month, so I would appreciate any and all comments. And I'm talking about the sudden loss of net worth. I also call it a negative wealth shock during the presentation. I'll talk about that. And looking specifically at insomnia in a late middle-aged group. And this is from the Health and Retirement Study. Nothing to disclose. So this is probably preaching a little bit to the choir in this audience of people who are interested in the social and behavioral determinants of health. But when we think about economic pathways to health, there's sort of the obvious pathway of being able to use money and assets for health-related expenditures. It's like better, faster, easier access to care, also health-enhancing goods and services. But the sort of less obvious to some pathway is that of social advantage, that our money and assets can actually confer these social advantages, like subjective social standing, emotional disposition changes like self-esteem and sense of control. Basically, knowing that we'll never have to go without those health-related expenditures can actually be as powerful in conveying a sense of health as having those health-related expenditures themselves. And so there's lots of different ways that we can categorize and look at money and assets. Income is a very standard way of looking at it, and it tends to be very easy to measure, that you can sort of ask most people what is your income, and they can give you a pretty good estimation of what their income is in a given year. If you ask someone what is their net worth, a lot of times they might have to do a more complicated calculus in their head, depending on whether or not they have any assets, of course. But they'll have to think, you know, what is my house worth? Do I have money in a bank account? What do I owe on my mortgage? What do I owe in credit card debt and medical debt, etc.? So then why do we use net worth as a measure if it's so tough to measure? And the reason for that is sort of rooted in an economic theory called the life cycle hypothesis. And you don't have to be a behavioral economist in order to sort of understand and see the face validity of this theory, because we are sort of spoon-fed it as the way we should plan our savings and spending across our life course. That at some earlier points in time, we may borrow student loans. Anybody? Me over here. And then at some point, hopefully, we stop borrowing, start saving, and then in retirement plan for a period of dis-saving. And in this ideal trajectory, the net worth will peak in that late middle age pre-retirement period, 50 to 64 roughly, although it varies a little. And then while we're dis-saving in retirement, our assets can supplant our income to some extent. Now, for those of us who are interested in the social determinants of health know that this, of course, is an ideal trajectory, and there may be some people who don't participate in asset accumulation over time. And so if we wanted to compare these two trajectories, it's usually much more, gives us much more information to compare it later on in the life course, as opposed to earlier in the life course where we may not see big differences in those trajectories. And so we tend to look at net worth as a predictor of health more often in a later, older aged population as opposed to people earlier in the life course. Of course, there can be alternate trajectories too, like this one I just put up, where someone's sort of going along the ideal and then all of a sudden their asset accumulation, their net worth rapidly falls. That's what we call a negative wealth shock. A negative wealth shock is a large, sudden loss of net worth, and it can be spurred by a lot of different things. Dr. Kaplan gave us a nice overview of things that happen during recession and economic downturn, especially job loss, stock market loss, that can take a hit to net worth. Personal circumstances can actually drive a lot of net worth loss in the U.S. The number one cause of bankruptcy is medical debt. So that can be a big thing that sort of changes someone's net worth circumstances. And certainly tragic life events that are more rare that can happen. Natural disasters, Bernie Madoff can take your retirement savings, and so on. So there's lots of different things. All of those can come together and create what we call a negative wealth shock. The reason why we're interested in negative wealth shock and insomnia is the idea that stress from that wealth loss will activate the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, increasing the risk of insomnia. And so we can see from this diagram here that the cascade of effects that happens in the HPA axis results in an increase of cortisol. And cortisol is sometimes called the awakening hormone. In a normal cycle, we sort of peak in the morning. It helps us stay awake. But if you're laying in bed at night thinking about all your stress, including your wealth loss, that cortisol comes, that peaking cortisol comes at the wrong time. And there has been some previous research that has shown that, first of all, chronic financial strain, so financial strain across the life course, has been associated with an increased risk of insomnia, and that also negative wealth shocks have been associated in the literature with other health consequences of this same HPA axis, including depression. And the reason why we care about insomnia, the public health consequences, why it's important, is, well, I think, first of all, it's easier to talk about insomnia because everyone in this room has had a poor night of sleep at some point. So we all can sort of empathize with how that feels. And then imagine maybe some have even experienced many nights of that, and we know that it can really impact our quality of life and our well-being, that we don't feel well after we don't sleep well. But that long-term, in terms of the big public health consequences of insomnia, that these can cause major problems, including a lack of normal judgment, having impaired judgment, having impaired cognitive functioning. And one of the big things there is increased risk of injury, especially automobile crashes or on the job type injuries. And then also chronic disease development. That insomnia has been associated with an increased risk of development of a lot of the metabolic chronic diseases. And I've included this graph here just as an example. This looks at sleep duration, which is one way to measure insomnia. And it looks at incident hypertension percentages, and it's broken out by depression and non, because depression can certainly affect sleep. And what we see is on the right-hand side, the non-depressed participants in this study, that there was almost a linear trend there between sleep duration and incident hypertension, where those who slept less it had an increased incidence of hypertension. And we see a more U-shape on the left-hand side with those who have depression, but certainly those who are sleeping much less than 5 hours a night, have an increased risk of hypertension. And that's just one of the examples of the public health consequences of insomnia and why it's important to study. So the research aims for my study is to determine whether negative wealth shock is associated with insomnia in a late middle-aged population. So looking at those folks who are about ready to retire and about ready to sort of be using those assets and are really sort of relying upon them and then losing them in a negative wealth shock. And so I just showed on the previous slide insomnia being defined as sleep duration. There's many different ways that we can define it. In my study, the way we look at insomnia is whether sometimes someone reporting sometimes or most of the time to experiencing 3 or 4 of the following symptoms. So that's difficulty initiating sleep, difficulty maintaining sleep, so whether you can fall asleep, whether you can stay asleep, early morning awaking, waking up too early, and then finally not feeling well rested in the morning. The methods I use the Health and Retirement Study, which is a nationally representative sample of people starting in late middle age in the U.S. They started asking insomnia questions in 2002. It's a biennial survey. And first they were doing it every 2 years, and then they switched over to do it every 4 years. So we've got 2002, 2004, 2006, and then a break to 2010. I'm restricting the sample. It includes late middle age and older folks in the Health and Retirement Study. I'm only including those in late middle age. And then I have talked a little bit already about the insomnia dichotomized, if they have 3 or more symptoms. Negative wealth shock here is looking at a loss of 75% or more of their net worth between two survey waves, so from time one to time two, which is a 2-year gap. And that's a pretty conservative estimate. Some in the literature have gone a little lower. What I want to do here is minimize any misclassification bias, because some people have, you know, some reporting of their assets that just differ because they don't necessarily remember what they reported from 1 to 2 years. But loss of 75% or more is definitely indicating that something big has happened here, that the majority of what they have to their name has been taken away. And the model that I'm using here is a pooled cross-sectional model using logistic regression and controlling for repeated measurement there and controlling for some important covariates, including things that predict the majority of wealth shocks in the U.S. And so here's the demographic characteristics of our study sample, but broken out by whether or not they experience negative wealth shock. And you can see from the ends that negative wealth shock is actually not that rare, that a lot of people in the sample are experiencing that. And what we do see is some demographic differences, that those who experience negative wealth shock are more likely to be female and also are more likely to be from racial and ethnic minorities and have slightly lower educational attainment. In terms of time-varying characteristics, some things that may have been predictive of the wealth shock itself, we see that those who experience negative wealth shock have a lower household median income, lower levels of marriage and partnership, higher levels of unemployment, much higher levels of uninsurance, and higher levels of chronic conditions, and higher levels of ADL limitations, that's activities of daily living limitations, it's a marker of disability. And that we do see, first of all, in the no wealth shock population, in the general population, that there still is a high prevalence of insomnia, that 1/3 of persons are experiencing insomnia, but that is elevated in the negative wealth shock population, and that less than the entire group that is reporting insomnia is actually using some sort of sleep aid or medication, and that's both over-the-counter and prescription, but that we do see slightly higher levels in that negative wealth shock population. So here is results from the multivariable analysis, the logistic regression. I run three models here. All of these models are controlled for demographics, so gender, race, ethnicity, age, educational attainment, and then two sort of sleep issues, which is the use of those sleep medications, and then also a seasonal effect because we sleep differently than we do in different times. So looking at when they did their interview, I know personally I am like so messed up from daylight savings time, so you can sort of imagine how the seasons might sort of change how someone reports they're sleeping. But in each of these three models, we can see that negative wealth shock remains statistically significant, even when we put in model two, sort of socio-demographic changes that may have precipitated the wealth shock, and in model three, also health effects that may have precipitated the wealth shock. So that above and beyond someone sort of having insomnia due to the stress of being unemployed, there's also a 19% higher risk of insomnia from that wealth shock itself. And the public health implications, first of all, the conclusion, is that sudden wealth loss in late middle age is associated with a higher risk of insomnia in our study. And I wanted to talk today a little bit about possible intervention strategies and really going along with the theme of our week, which is health in all policies, because I really think that this is an area where policies outside of even the normal health policy framework are very important to the prevention of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention of negative wealth shock and insomnia. So first of all, the primary prevention, the prevention of the sudden wealth loss itself. Well, these analyses were done prior to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Now, one of the big hallmarks of the Affordable Care Act was that out-of-pocket costs would be limited, would have a maximum, and that may actually really have an increase a decrease in the number of people who experience catastrophic medical debt. And so what we need to do is sort of continue with the Affordable Care Act to look and see if that's actually really happening, that people are having lower levels of catastrophic medical debt, and then whether that's lowering the population proportion of people experiencing negative wealth shock in that late middle age population, because they're at an extremely vulnerable period in that time where they are usually having more healthcare issues than people in the earlier life course, but also at risk for these wealth shocks itself. And there's other things. Dr. Kaplan talked a little bit about this with active labor market programs and unemployment insurance, the things that can sort of, once, if there is economic downturn and people are losing their jobs in mass numbers, that we can sort of keep people. Active labor market programs are things that help people move back into jobs after they've lost theirs. So sort of keeping people sort of steadily employed and having a safety net if they lose that if they lose their job, so that they don't have to drain down their assets completely. And sort of secondary prevention of the issues here include prevention of the high stress after wealth loss. So certainly losing all your money is a stressful event, but one of the things that's important is sort of the stability of social programs even during an economic downturn. So those social programs that we can sort of keep continuous. There was an article, I think, in the American Journal of Public Health not that long ago that talked about increased use of food banks during the recession. And, sort of keeping that basic social safety net available for people, even if they are are losing wealth, sort of draining their assets, knowing that there will be something available for them at some point in time. And that another thing that sort of came out of the recession for this population in general was people taking early retirement, early distribution of Social Security. And so whether that, not that's a wise financial choice, it was an important safety net for these people to be able to take advantage of, and so keeping those stability of social programs. And even during an economic downturn, when the first thing we do is say, oh, we are contracting, should we take away programs? You know, and we all in public health experience that a lot. Some of our resources get taken away, and it's important to sort of lobby and continue on. It's also important to think about the buffering of interpersonal resources and how important those can be, sort of families and transfers and keeping people sort of active and engaged in the world, even if they're going through this personal trauma in terms of wealth loss that can be very salient to keeping their sort of positive mental thinking even in the face of tragedy. And finally, the treatment of insomnia. So we need clinician awareness of the health effects of wealth loss, that this isn't a rare issue that's going on in that population, that we need clinicians to be aware. But we need to also be aware that that can't be the only thing that we're thinking about, because people are going to start minimizing their interactions with the healthcare system. But there's research out there that shows that once somebody goes through something like a wealth loss, they're not immediately, especially if they lost their wealth because of getting healthcare treatment, they're not immediately going to jump back into a system in which caused their wealth issues in the first place. And so we need to also be thinking about insomnia prevention and insomnia treatment that doesn't require someone to jump into the healthcare system, but really things that we could do in the public health framework as well. So that is it. I want to thank my co-authors and collaborators and National Institute of Aging, which has provided the funding, and certainly all of those who are involved in the health and retirement study, participants, and everyone else. Thank you. Yeah, you know, and some research has looked at specific assets. I mean, we've seen a lot with the recession, looking at home foreclosures. The problem is that people tend to handle, in order to get the broadest picture of a wealth loss, it's best to sort of look at a broader sort of total net worth as opposed to specific components, because people tend to manage things differently. Some people will throw it all on a credit card, all their expenses, in order to save their house. Some people will get rid of their house in order to never be in debt. Those are very personal calculations. And so I will say that, you know, this is a continuum of anyone who has assets, and definitely there are people who have different assets across the wealth spectrum. And so at lower wealth levels, really what it means is people are losing their homes. To lose 75% of their net worth means a lot of times people are losing their homes or accruing very significant sort of home equity debt. At the higher end of the net worth spectrum is when people are going to start losing a lot of multiple assets. That most people in the U.S. don't actually have things like stock holdings or, you know, a lot of very intense wealth, a really diverse portfolio. And so a lot of times it is people losing their home. Sure. Yeah, so I did look at pensions. Pension data in the health and retirement study is a little messy, and not entirely. It's really hard. If somebody has a defined benefit pension, just to sort of clarify for everyone, that's you're intending to have, you know, a guaranteed sort of annuity come during retirement, more like a Social Security than having sort of a balance somewhere that you can draw down on. And so the issue with defined benefit pensions is that it's hard to estimate how much is actually worth in what, you know, you can't really calculate it like you could calculate a bank account balance. But that's a really good point, that is a very big security blanket for some people, and those are absolutely eroding and sort of no longer being offered to people, too, and it would be important, I think, to look at in the future. Thank you. Yes? You know, so I haven't looked at all of them. I will say that I have done some research looking at whether having a well floss during a recessionary period versus a non-recessionary period differs, and I haven't found one that they're sort of, it's bad for you in terms of risk of insomnia equally in a recession or non-recession period. I will say that that's still sort of a debate in the larger literature about whether losing during a recession is worse for you or better for you because people around you are losing, so you have sort of a camaraderie, or if it's worse because you feel like it's not going to get better because everyone around you is losing. So there's sort of two schools of thought there. I'm not finding anything, though. Yeah, thanks for asking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for attending the session.